me just a moment here. Kay only now gave me the scriptures that I'm to speak on. And turn to Ephesians 5. Let's see. She gave me verse 22. Wives, submit to your own husbands as unto the Lord. She gave me a number of others, but I don't think I'll get through this one. So, verse 25, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church, and he gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever yet hateth his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. Father, we thank you for your word. Lord, we thank you that we are given, Lord, this treasure to carry through our life your word, to be ambassadors of it, to minister it and to feed and to teach others. But Lord, we ask that today that you would teach us, each one. Lord, that you would, through this conference, so many tremendously important topics. So many things, Lord, is the motive in the heart and the attitude and the effort to minister, to feed the word. But Lord, in the process, sometimes we get so caught up with all of the jobs that we're to do that if we have lost one another in the process, what have we gained? And Lord, we ask that today that you would minister to each and every one of us. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, when we were going over things for this conference and all the different topics were kind of there, I was just kind of sitting, thinking and all the different topics and thinking about different ones as they came up. Kind of waiting for somebody to say, oh, Don ought to do that one, and nobody did that. And some that I really like, and then it came down to marriage, and I think it was Brian who said, Don should do marriage. And on one hand, it was quite touching, and but at the same time, I certainly do not come to you today as if I have a perfect marriage. I don't. But Gene is coming along very wonderfully. And the... very pleased. But we do, though, obviously live in a time where, as you look around, how many of us have lost dear friends in the ministry over the issue of marriage and of their home falling apart while we are out attempting to build something so much. And then we not only lose the home, but we usually lose everything we're trying to build as we're doing it. And here is Paul teaches us in Ephesians 5. I'm sure we all have plenty of studies on it. So it just is kind of to bring us to remembrance, though the topic obviously is love. And the issue of love within the marriage. And we're told, even, of course, by Jesus, by Paul here, husbands, love your wife, as Christ also loved the church, and he gave himself for it. And, of course, Jesus taught that's the same love that we're all to love one another with as well, as in John chapter 13, a new commandment give I unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you. And that we are all called to have this great love, this love one for another. But actually, I love the conversation that went on between Peter and Jesus after the resurrection on the shore. You all know it so well, you don't need to turn to it. It's already been referred to a couple times in other contexts. But there is Jesus and Peter, they met there. And Jesus asked Peter as they finally got alone after they had eaten. And there he turned to Peter and he asked him a question. He says, Peter, lovest thou me more than these? And there as he asked him the question three times, and of course, I suppose one of the great major emphasis of it is to feed my sheep and the responsibility of it. But it's more than a question, though, of being able to feed sheep and the responsibility of feeding sheep. It's also a great question of love. But also, as Jesus asked, it was not only a great question of love, it was also Jesus wanted to know what quality of love they had. For as Jesus asked Peter, he says, Peter, there was never an issue, do they love one another? I'm sure Jesus knew very, very well as Peter insisted, you know I love you. Why are you asking me this? Peter was so perplexed. It was not an issue of love with either one of them. But the real issue with Jesus was the quality of love. He wanted to know, lovest thou me more than these? Is your love an agape love? Is it the highest? Is it the richest of loves, Peter? How intense is your love? When you would take the love that you and I have one for another, of which we don't question, it is there. But the issue is lovest thou me more than these? I want to know where we stand in relationship, Peter, to your other loves of life, to your other attractions in life, the other things that fill the day and fill activity so much. Where do we stand? And I think that's not only a legitimate question when Jesus is wanting to teach agape love, the highest and richest love to Peter and to all of us. It's also a question, I think, in marriage. In a sense of being able to ask, lovest thou me? With many, many marriages, it's not a thing, do you love? Many, we've all counseled, how many people we counsel, they both insist they love each other. The problem isn't do they love each other. The great threat in the relationship is the intensity of it. How do they love one another in relationship to the other loves? Where is that one? That's the question that a lot of people have, and it's a very legitimate question. And here is Jesus, and I'm sure there's all sorts of books, and we have all got studies, I'm sure, on John 21. Perhaps what was Jesus talking about when he turned and he asked Peter, lovest thou me more than these? And as a lot of things are written on it, there was only three things we know for sure were there. That when he asked him, one was boats. Boats were there. They just come in from fishing all night. There was also the disciples, and there was the fish. That's all we know for sure was on the shore. But there is Jesus asked Peter, do you love me more than these? Where do I stand in relationship, Peter, to the boats? Where do I stand in relationship, Peter, to your career? Where do I stand in relationship to your job, your responsibility? Because you see, there's something there where we're the bride of Christ and we're to marry him as well. And it's equated in Ephesians 5 with the same standards, I think, that a marriage has the right. They're both mysteries and they're both the highest. This is the highest earthly love as it's to represent the highest of heavenly loves that we're to have. And it's something, I think, that we can look in a marriage and ask each other the same questions. And it's very, very right and legitimate that somebody would look and say, in a sense, where do I stand with the career? Where do I stand with the boats? And of course, in ministry, a lot of men, I mean, it's real easy to, with most men, to accuse them and to look at them. They just work for some worldly, carnal, you know, business, and they just go out and plow a dirty, nasty field and see how much they can bring home out of it. We're doing something so much higher and loftier. We're in the work of the ministry, which makes it much, much higher or much, much harder to lay it out. It becomes very much more difficult there to really, look at it and measure it out, which means that the job for us ought to be all the harder, and we ought to be willing to work all the harder to make sure that our love is great and is deep. But the great problem is a lot of men marry the boats. A lot of men marry the job. We marry the ministry. We marry it very, very easily, in a sense, and it takes us away from our wife. It takes us away from our children, our home. And then, of course, when we come home late, and if we get there, you know, and then they want to know, where have you been? And how many times through the years my wife has asked that question, and I made the foolish mistake of answering it. What do you mean, where have I been, woman? Where do you think I have been? Ask thou where I have been. I have been out representing the great God and Savior, the Creator of the universe, the Sustainer, the lover of lost souls, the hound of heaven representing him. I've been healing the sick, raising the dead, casting out demons. Askest thou where I have been? You want to know where I have been? Hush your ignorant, irreverent, blasphemous lips. I have been about my Father's business. Tear thouest me away from it? How easy it is, you know. It's a big stick, isn't it? It's a big one. But I've come to find when a husband isn't there, he isn't there. You can quote me on that. You can do that. Isn't it? Look, he's writing it down. Desperate, baby. I've said a lot better stuff than that, and you haven't written a thing yet. But if you're not, and we think that there's some nobility because we're not for different reasons, but if you're not home, if there isn't something there to where we're there, and men easily marry the boat, they easily marry the career. Notice women, on the other hand, because it's always are all two-sided. Women have a tendency to marry the children, and the on how that their life so easily gets into that, and you can always tell when somebody who they're married to by what happens when they got to give it up. A lot of men can't the thought of not being at the office or retiring. It's like a divorce. I can't quit my job. It's my life. It's a field. No, it's my life. You know, it's my song. It's my, what do you want me to do? Just go plant roses? I don't like roses. I can't, you know, and they give me this stupid watch. I work for them all these years. They give me a stupid watch, you know, and how depressed men are when they leave their career. Because they married it. They don't know what to do to go home to be with a woman, their wife. Women, on the other hand, they marry the kids. And their great tendency is so often you can see what happens when the kids grow up. Kids get married. You know, and the on how so easily, the kid gets married, and 2 weeks later, Johnny, he doesn't call me anymore. I'm his mother. I brought him into the world. I taught him how to walk and how to talk, and changed him and fed him and clothed him with him all these hours. I cuddled him at night. He doesn't call his mother. He's with that floozy, you know. Why do they care? You know, so often, you know, you're a husband and wife, you can tell who they're married to when they're together. Because you can watch them and realize it isn't to each other. Sometimes it's something else. I remember one time when I'm looking and watching my three boys, and we're doing something in the house, and they're crawling all over and wrestling and fighting, and I'm just kind of sitting there, and Jean and I are sitting there talking, and I turn to her. I said, you know, just starts laughing. She wanted to know what's so funny. I said, you know, the Bible says a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife. Yes. I'm just kind of smiling. I said, these guys are all going to leave us. They're all going to just up and walk out. She said, yes. I said, let's beat them to it. Let's do it first. Why wait? My boy's testimony is when I was growing up, my parents moved around a lot, but I always found them. But so often it's other things. We got the boats that we get that take our hearts away, and oftentimes they take us from each other. But not only were there the boats there, there was the disciples there, the friends. And here is Jesus asked Peter, do you love me more than your friends? That had to be a hard question, you see, because, of course, Peter, he had on one hand very nobly proclaimed his great love for the Lord, but he left him and taken his friends fishing. I don't know about you guys, I'm going fishing. Even when Jesus wasn't right with Jesus and the love wasn't there and clear and strong, he still had his friends. He'd always retreat back to his buddies. Always as those he could hang around with so easily, that were so comfortable with. I go fishing. We're going with you. And off they went. And here, as he looks there, Jesus, Peter, do you love me more than your friends? You know, we hadn't anymore gotten married, back from our honeymoon. I'm walking out the door on a Monday night. Got my gym bag. I'm going to play volleyball. There's a bunch of guys. We played two-man volleyball, sand volleyball for years. And as I'm walking out, and I got my volleyball stuff and going out to play, Jean looks at me. And as I'm going out the door, she says, where are you going? I'm going to play volleyball. Monday night. Oh, have a nice time. You know, as I'm going out, and I get in my car and I'm driving all the way over there. And one of the things you start doing after you get married, you didn't do before you got married, you start talking to yourself a lot. I'm going down the road, and all the way through, I'm going over this. Where are you going? Have a nice time. She did not mean that. She did not want me to have a nice time at all. And I'm sitting there talking all the way through, I never used to talk a lot in the car, and where I'm going, carrying on all these conversations, and I started doing that after I got married. I did it a lot. And Thursday night, same week, I'm walking out the door again, gym bag in hand, handball. Where are you going? I passed in a Y. Every Thursday night, there's a group of guys, we played handball together. and I'm going out to play handball. And as I go out, where are you going? What do you mean where I'm going? You know, we've been engaged for a year. You've watched me for a year. I did not change my life. What is going on here? Why? You've always known. You married me. You knew me. You did not tell me when we were dating. By the way, when we get married, you're not going to do that anymore. You did not tell me when you walk out the door, that gym bag, and you wait, baby, because you're going to be talking to yourself all night long. She did not say that. She never suggested at all. We just went right on through the dating relationship. Everything was fine. I went Monday nights, I'm out to volleyball. Thursday night, I'm playing handball. And all of a sudden, now I'm coming home and I'm guilty. And I'm this idiot, and I'm this jerk, and I'm this terrible guy. And I'm talking to myself, and I didn't even win the arguments in the car. I didn't. I mean, that's when you're really in trouble, when you control the whole argument and you still lose it. You still get there and feel like I'm still losing it. I thought by the time I got here, I'd be back on top of it. And then you're telling the guys about the conversation. And both the one in the home and the one in the car, and then you're having another conversation with them, and you're going on with it. And I'm saying, why did she do this to me? This isn't fair. And then I realized one day as I'm in the car carrying on this conversation, that she didn't change the rules. I changed them. As so when I went and rented that suit, and we, you know, cut out a whole bunch of foliage and threw it in the building and invited all our friends and relatives and grandparents and cousins all to come in and watch this whole ceremony that was going on. We invited them to come and watch us change our entire priorities of life right in front of them. We wanted the mother and father, and we wanted the brothers and the friends all to gather here. You stand here from now on. You stand over here. The friends are there instead. Everybody's in order. And now we are now giving ourselves to each other and everything else. All the other relationships in life are being reorganized today. I had no idea I was doing that, but I did that. If somebody would have explained that to me, I would have said, wait, hold it. Just a minute. What's this going to do to volleyball? I got to know. I would have. And then, of course, when I got married, they slipped it in, and they even had you say it without knowing you were saying it, because I said, you know, forsaking all others, I pledge thee my troth. I didn't mind saying that because I didn't have one. I didn't know it. I had no idea. Thought, hey, if I ever get a troth, you can have it. I don't know what it is. It is. And then I found out later on, years later, the word troth, it means fidelity. In other words, when I got married, it meant that I turned to her and I said, I want you to know that I have forsaken all others. Everything else, boats, friends, they are all being reorganized and you are now number one in my life. I had no idea I was saying that. I didn't mean to say it. But I did. One night I came home late, you know, and Jean's sound asleep. And the next morning as I wake up, she's kind of got the pillow half pulled over her head, you know, and over there. And as my eyes started to open up and I focused, and I look over under her pillow that she had pulled over her head, there's this huge knife, biggest knife we own. Huge knife right in her pillow. And by the time I realized what this is, I said, there's a knife in the bed. You know, and she just said, oh, I'm sorry. And I said, what do you mean you're sorry? I could have leaned over to kiss you and cut my lips off. What do you have? Why is there a knife in the bed? And she said, well, a lot of nights when you're not here and I hear noises, I get scared. And I'm afraid. And so I take the knife and I put it on my pillow. But when I hear you come in, I take it and I put it back in the bed. And I fell asleep and I didn't know it. I looked at her and I said, woman, God has ordained when we come and go in this life. What are you doing? Trust God, you'll be fine. It's appointed unto every man when to die. Don't worry about this. Trust God for these things. She needed this. I thought she did. But I'm so upset about all this. You get so angry, your friends. If it isn't the boat or it's the friends, it's the Gene used to tell me. He said, you know, if I ever really want to know what's going on, I listen to you talk to your friends. You tell them, you don't tell me. I said, well, honey, it's intelligent stuff. You know, but the... this is big stuff, honey. I mean, but on how I could just with my friends, I mean, the disciples over there, on how I could so freely carry on. How we could have such good friendships and relationships, and then you'd walk home and hear this person is supposedly your friend, that you've now moved ahead of your friend to make a better friend out of, and yet there, you know, I'd come in the door at the end of the day, and there she is where she'd heated and reheated and reheated the reheated, you know, a few times, and then she's tired and she's exhausted and trying to carry on any conversation with these three things running around the house, pulling everything down and around and messes, and finally her friend has come home. Supposedly her friend. And as you come home, and the next thing you know, you're sitting there and you're uptight and you're angry, and you've been with your friends. You've carried on, or you've got your friends out there. And she's upset. Or she's teary-eyed. And she comes in, and then, of course, then is when you gotta handle that right there. You gotta nip that in the bud. You know, sort of a thing, you know, sort of a... I do not want to come home to a blithering woman, a crying woman. Now stop that. Don't you know in the Old Testament a servant could be put to death for being sad in the king's presence? Now don't do that to me. How can we come home and be friends if you're going to cry like this? I don't, you know, sort of a thing. I was so good. I mean, before I came home, she knew why she was crying. About 10 minutes later, she was crying again, but she didn't even know why anymore. I could say, I'll make you cry though you don't even know why you're crying, woman, if you want to know. And on how again we put each other back, and we hurt and we wound. But here Jesus, he looked at Peter, do you love me more? You love me more than the boats. You love me more than your friends. And there may be the fish over there, and just the pleasures, the comforts, the satisfying things in life so often. And how again, dear Jesus, wanting to know, Peter, where do I stand in relation just to the pleasures, the enjoyments of life? Am I above them? You love me more than these things? Do you prefer each other that highly? We live in such a selfish generation. We look at each other and we say, I love you. And yet at the same time, it's quite fair to say, how much do you love me? Do you love me more than these things? And how so easily we don't. We again hadn't any more gotten married than one day an opportunity came along that anybody in their right mind would have done what I did. Anybody, any human being. Any thinking human being. There's an opportunity to buy a Porsche at a price that was never before or since offered. Once in all of the history of humankind, such a deal was made available. And the only thing I had to do, since this deal was just take, we had the money. Almost to the penny. I mean, God is so wonderful the way that, you know, so I took the money and I bought the Porsche. And now the thing is we had talked. Only just in simple discussions and nothing set in stone, nothing firmly agreed on, but because a lot of the money had come from wedding presents and from returning stuff to stores and all this kind of stuff. We had talked about things like utensils and furniture. And we had talked about, you know, I mean, stuff that, you know, that pots and pans and things like this around the house and stuff. But I mean, it's stuff you can get anytime. You know, stuff that is always out there on any day of any week is available. Always has been, always will be. And so, I mean, to me, this was a no-brainer. She agreed, but the... but I come along and I come home with this Porsche. And she's looking at this, and she's, oh, wow, where did you get that? Oh, honey. The Lord, and it's on there. And you find yourself, you got this funny sinking feeling that this is not going to go well today. You know, kind of a thing there. When she's trying to be excited, but also, you know, she's sitting there, I think I know where this came from. I think I know what this really cost. And in it, you know, because for my pleasure, for my comfort, for what it was that I thought was so important, each time, whether, honey, I love you, but I have my friends, and I got my boats, and I got my pleasures. and on the great stress that goes into a marriage, the great strain that goes in. And the thing, it doesn't take you long, though, in marriage to realize is there is no boat and there is no friend and there is no fish that'll ever satisfy what God designed for a marriage. Never. All is quite empty. I don't know how many people through the years I've actually watched them not only lose the boat, but lose the marriage. I've seen people because of their friends, all of which left me. Over the years, I grew up, from 3 years old all the way till I get married, same friends, same home. All these guys, grammar school, high school, and college, they're all gone. They've all moved off for all have other jobs, all have other things. We call and hear things now and then a little bit, but by and large, the friends are gone. The boat's changed. All of the other things, but you realize as the decades go on, you have one another. And that is it. And then one day, if you lose each other, you usually lose all of them with it anyway. Until you learn to treasure and put it where it ought to be. And here is Paul in Ephesians 5 when he says, "Husbands, love your wife as Christ also loved the church. And he gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies, and he who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever yet hateth his own flesh, but he nourishes it and he cherishes it, just as the Lord does to the church." And here Paul, as he says, "Husbands, love your wife," he gives the most simple, basic illustration of what he's saying. After he gives some nice theological things, as Christ loved the church, that he might sanctify and cleanse it in the washing of water by the word, presented to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing. But here, as he lays it all out, nice, beautiful, theological, high things that we can reasonably read and study and teach others. But then he brings it right down to a very, very simple illustration. And he just says, the proof text, if you love your wife, is you will love your wife as you love your own body. That's the great test of if a man loves his wife, right? If he loves her as his own body. And that's where, as you watch people, how do they love their wife and how do they love their own body? For Paul says, no man ever yet hateth his flesh, but he nourishes it and he cherishes it, and don't we? No matter what it is. And this morning, that's a great, great test. But I mean, you wake up in the morning, and as you woke up this morning and you no sooner inhaled or exhaled or something, you realized you had bad breath. You woke up with it and there you didn't, but you didn't, because you nourish your flesh and you cherish your body and you love the thing. And there that you woke up this morning, your breath was bad. You didn't sit there and say, "Yuck, yuck, 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 yuck. I hate you, mouth. Why do you do this to me? 365 days a year, my entire life, you wake up stinking. I cannot stand you." No. You got up and walked over and you brushed your teeth. You fixed it up. Said, "Oh, here, you need to be made clean. We'll fix that for you. So we'll both be happy." And then you took your body over and then you were, "Oh, hoo, hoo, whoa, little game here." You know, type of thing. That's no problem. Nice warm shower. I love warm showers. You know, type of thing. And you took your body right in there. You spent the first 30 minutes nourishing, cherishing. You know, going over there and washing that body and making it clean and making it comfortable, doing your hair and fixing yourself up, because we nourish our flesh and we cherish our flesh. You know, watching over it, take care of it. You don't hate it. You didn't stand there in the mirror and look in there and just like, "Hate you! I shaved you yesterday and look at you today. Look at you. I am getting sick," and some of you did. But there as he looks, I mean, we cherish it. So let's fix you up. Do all I can to make you and all yours so the world can see. Wonder, love, and praise when I walk out in the presence of others today. You did all you could to try to take your flesh and to fix it. You nourish it and you cherish it. That's how we ought to be to one another. But so often when there's something where the other one's got a little odor, he's got a little something out of, you know, how we can look and say, "Oh, what is wrong with you, woman? You stink to me." Or, you know, you got, how many times have we been through this? But yet how many times have we been through nourishing and cherishing our own flesh? Every day we do it. Every day our mercies are new to our own flesh. Every day our graces are, you know, but the wife needs something. You know, and how we, you know, and the next thing we know we're looking at this, so you need what? $20! $20! You need how much? $20? What did you do with the $20 I gave you last month? You have not even turned in the receipts on it yet and you want $20 more. What do you think I am? And yet how many $20 bills have we been through? For our flesh. For our comforts. We keep no track of it. We aren't interested in it. We don't want to know. We love being merciful to our own wallet and say, oh, well, it's all right. It must have just, who knows? Forget it. I don't want to know. We'll just get you some more. But the wife needs something. All of a sudden, something in us, we find ourselves, no, I don't want to do that. What do you, why? Or what do you, you know, and all these answers, all these things we want. We love them as our own body. Back in 1975, when we moved from Calvary Costa Mesa up to the conference center in Lake Arrowhead, there's a house that was going up for auction, up for bid, and the night that it happened to come up for bid, I wasn't able to be there because I had to teach that night, and it was one that was an auction, it was a bid, and so my dad and I, who was quite a Scotsman, he taught me how to be one, and trained me well in it, being tight, and he and I sat down, went through all my finances, what was the maximum amount I could possibly spend on this house, and he was going to go up with Gene and bid on the house. And we were starting at a much lower figure, and then, okay, here is the, that's it. The Lord's not in it. Forget it. You know, figure. And so I went off to teach that night, and I came home, and I no sooner opened the door when I got home. They were already home. It was quite obvious we got the house. Gene's frolicking around the house, you know. We got the house. We got the house. We got the house. You know, singing and everything. Right, thrill. I said, oh, honey, this quite went on. How much was it? She said, oh, that's between you and your father. You don't know? Well, you talked to him. He did. He did it. I didn't know. He's in the other room. So I went in the other room and said, Dad, got the house? He said, yeah. I said, how much was it? He told me how much it was, and it was a lot more. I'm waiting for him, and I said, oh. Kind of waiting for him to pull out a checkbook and say, hey, son, love you. What did Dad for? Here. Everybody else for it. Let me, you know, or something there, and he didn't do that. And I'm kind of disappointed. I'm wondering, you gave him the cash, my cashier. You, now I bought and I forfeit if I don't. And we're going on, and my dad, who is pretty quiet, a lot of people think I'm adopted, but he's a pretty quiet guy. And he's sitting there, and he's and not given to philosophy particularly at all. But he looked at me and he says, Don, can I give you a word? And I said, yeah, I'd like some money with it, you know. But he says, let me tell you something, and I think you ought to remember it. I said, what's that? He said, he who has a happy wife has a happy wife. So, I've come to realize that's about the greatest piece of advice I've ever... Whatever it costs you to get a happy wife, it is worth the cost. I can assure you. I've come to find through the years that when somebody comes to the realization that all the other things that seem so costly that it costs us to achieve that, they're all lessers. You'll end up with the greater when you end up, you know, caring and nourishing and loving and washing and cleansing and pouring out your love and your affection on your mate. It'll always come back to you. Always come back to you. I know... A few months ago, one day, there and Jean at home, she says, you know, I'd like to, can we redo the bedroom window coverings? Well, I don't know. They're just so drab. They're old. And okay, we can do that. Go ahead and do that. But I just took her for what she said. That's all I did. And then I had no idea at the time that you never, never do window coverings without doing bed coverings. Gosh, terribly, they will just never go. You cannot sleep in that room ever again. It was impossible. You cannot function in the room. You try to change your clothes in that room, you will not know how to get dressed. You won't know how to do anything. And so here, of course, but then as soon as you do the bed coverings, let me tell you something, those sheets are not going to sleep with anybody in them unless they match that bed covering. So next thing we know, we have bed coverings and we get sheets. But then, lo and behold, you no sooner had the sheets and bed coverings, they're up against the new drapes there, then it clashed terribly. It usually will, with the carpet. And there is a no way that goes with the carpet. As soon as the carpet's coming in, of course, now do you realize what this did to the other three bedrooms? Do you realize what we have done to our house? Honey, this is terrible. How can we can't go under this? And we know sooner than, of course, obviously the walls have to be painted because now they look so drab and dead next to this bright, fresh new carpet. But then do you have any idea what that does to the wallpaper? It's over. And here we go. Well, you know, it's window coverings. But then as we're kind of getting this whole thing in, all of a sudden, our bedroom furniture that we have had since we got married, it was always fine before. But all of a sudden now, honey, doesn't this bedroom furniture just look terrible? Oh. None of it looked bad to me. I was a happy guy. Can't we just put the old ones back up, the window coverings, and go back? You cannot do that. In the meantime, I'm thinking one thing I will get out of this by the time we're through. I got to unchoose a mattress. That's the only thing I really could get. That's what the room was for, I thought. And so we've had the same one for decades, and I thought, I'm going to get a mattress out of this. So finally, when the whole bedroom furniture, entirely new bedroom furniture, and then she says, and then we can give our old bedroom furniture, you know, to Mike and Brenda, just getting married, and they, you know, this would be nice bedroom furniture, them get started. Ah, it's wonderful. Let's go ahead and do that. Yes, great, honey, sure. She said, but we can't give them our old mattress. Yes, we can. We can do that. No. They got the new mattress. Then, of course, after the bedroom furniture is all in and it's all in there, I mean, do you realize I never thought of it. Talk about an idiot, but I never thought of it. But the lamps, could you imagine how those lamps, the old lamp looks in the room? And she's sitting there to where, honey, it's almost done, the lamps. Yes, we need lamps. Get the lamps. We get the lamps, and then finally the doilies for the lamps. And every single thing, if you go into our room now, every single thing is absolutely brand new but the mattress. But the only reason you have the room. Then. What is yours for? Somebody got lost here, folks. But we men are thick. I remember one time, I'll never forget, Jean came to me and she told me, she looked at me straight in the eye. Just, she said, you know, you are my best friend. And I looked at her. And it was one of those things you're kind of supposed to respond to. You know, kind of one of those things where, hey, far out, you know, all right. I mean, she looks at me and she said, I'm your best, you poor thing. You know, I mean, you're trying to think of some, because I actually thought, friends. She wants to be friends with me. I got plenty of friends. I didn't marry her for friendship. I've got friends. I wanted a woman, you know, sort of a thing. And that's what I wanted. Why can't you just be happy being my woman? Isn't that enough? Now you want to be friends. What's next? I thought I couldn't answer her. I looked back at her. One thing when we did the bedroom at another fatal mistake, bad perception, but when she's getting lamps, she got one that she didn't like and was going to return it because she went and got another one. But now she had an extra lamp. They come out, and here's that lamp sitting, the new one down in the living room. She comes to me the other day, and she says, you know, that new lamp sure clashes with that sofa. You know? But when it comes to where we love one another? Is it something where our lives, I'll tell you, on one hand, what you, because Paul says, you love your wife, you will present to yourself what you do. You will live with what you do. You will have it one day. You are going to present to yourself whatever it is that you do. And if you don't do much, you won't get much. And I'll tell you, in all honesty, I don't care that much about, I mean, all these things that wives see and Gene sees around, I don't care much about them, to be all that honest with you, but I love when it's done. I would live in a dump. By nature, I wouldn't know I was in it until I heard the truck. You know, oh no, time to move, you know, or something. I would not think that much about it, but I'm so glad she does. It's so wonderful to actually. When we're in the bedroom, she's wanting to do all the stuff in the bedroom. I said, honey, bedrooms are to sleep in.
You sleep, you close your eyes. That's what the room is. You close your eyes and, you know. I said, now, honey, close your eyes. Now, what do you see? She says, I see new drapes. I see new drapes. No, no. We are not Hindus. We are Christians here. Now, don't do that to me. Then when you look, at one another and you realize what it is to love and to love loving. Enjoy it. Realize one day all the other things, if you don't know what it is to love and to care. The other day when we came down here and packed everything up for the plane, you know, and flew down, rented a car, got everything all loaded and unloaded, and here we are opening up the trunk, and as we're opening up the trunk, all of a sudden Jean gives a gasp. Oh, no! What? My clothes. I left them hanging in the bedroom at home. Come on. She said, I did. Both of our hanging clothes. And she said, I don't have anything to wear. I said, come on. And I looked at her. And I said, are you serious? She said, yes, I'm serious. I can't believe it. All my clothes. Oh. Yeah. I said, well, honey, praise God, right at the off ramp, there was a pick and save. 20 minutes, anything you can get in the cart, it's all yours. She looked at me and she says, right up the freeway, 101 outlets. 101 of them, huh? 101. Honey, you left them on purpose. I know you left them on purpose, didn't you? You did, you did, you did. You think I'm stupid, don't you? She looks at me and she says, no. I think you're very smart. I think you are very, very smart, and I think you are speaking to hundreds of pastors on loving their wives on Wednesday. No, she didn't do that. But I think she thought it. I'll never know. I'll never know whether when she says, honey, what do you think about drapes? She just, watch the idiot. What is that? Drapes? Sure, drapes. How about a new home, honey? You know what I mean? You know, it is time to eat. But may I suggest, I sometimes almost want to use humor to attack a subject that I think it's the only way to do it. And sometimes if we can kind of laugh our way through a thing, but it's very painful. It is very difficult. I'm sure here there are marriages that's exactly what you're going through. We went through some horrendous times. And the things are really determining. There's I came into the house, and we went through those things. So why, where have you been? Why aren't you here? And gave any one of the boats. I've been with the boats. I've been with the disciples. I've been here. In meantime, neglected these things. And then learned with some tears and some struggles and some heartache. Things that I'm sure there are many of you that your marriage is in trouble. And yet, because we're in the ministry, we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to deal with it. We don't. And we're embarrassed. I remember one time when we were going through quite a bit, and there was a lot of stress in the marriage, and we had one of the elders from Calvary and Costa Mesa over for dinner. And there as we're having dinner, Gene was really right at the edge of things in so many ways, and we're sitting there having dinner, and this guy, he just sensed what was going on in the marriage a little bit, and he kept asking, how are you guys? You're fine. Well, how are you really? It's really none of your business. I mean, how do you... I said, I'm fine. Now, if you can't come over and lie together, I don't want you in my home. You know, type of a thing. Now, just leave me alone. I do not want you... What are you doing coming to my house asking me if I'm okay? You know, type of a thing. Yet I was... I did not want the topic. It was a sensitive... And he keeps on coming in kind of on Jean and how is she... And the next thing you know, as soon as that first tear happens, you're in big trouble. You know, it's, honey, suck it up. It's starting to... Get that tear back in there. You know, he's getting his foot in the door. Don't you realize? And the next thing you know, she breaks down and she begins to weep. And as there she begins to cry, and I'm over there, she's really fine. I don't. Long day, those kids, sometimes I'll tell you the things they can put you through. You know. Wonder what in the world we had them for sometimes. You know, but as you're going on and you're trying, I'm trying to back her up, and she's there trying to help me, and I don't know, I'm crying. Either, you know, I must have been eight, somebody eight, you know, or whatever, and trying to make me look good. As then we sat and talked, and I realized that this guy did care for us. And he did sit there and talk to us about some things. And rather, and fortunately, we dealt with them. And it usually, it's easier for me to talk to men because I tend to look, I think men are wrong more. Or else you're really good at the drapes and the other stuff, and it is for real women. But I think we tend to, rather than really making the decision, to realize, I want to grow old with you. I want to grow old and happy with you. Everything else will come and go, but I want you. And I want to share, and I want you for my best friend. I want to enjoy time with you. When everything and everybody's gone, just you and me, and when we can get away from the boats and the friends and the fish, and we can just be together, it's the most wonderful thing of all. And when you have that, you will present it to yourself one day. Whatever it is that you do. When I was at Calvary and Costa Mesa one time, I had a counseling appointment, and the young fella came in as bewildered as I've ever seen anybody. And he's sitting there, he'd been married for 2 years. And he sat there and he told me about this girl he married. And as he described her, I mean, this wonderful, Christian, loving, spirit-filled woman of prayer and love of the Lord and godly life and all these wonderful traits, he went on and on and on about her. And now they've been married for 2 years. And the next thing you know, he described this woman now as this wretched, angry, hostile, frustrated, weepy. You know, I mean, just like she tore out the skin and an alien climbed out, you know, or something. And he goes on, and he's sitting there, he's quite honest with me. There was nothing, and he's there, and he's so frustrated. And he's telling me about this woman, and all this, and he's just so, how could this have happened to me? That's all he saw, is what has happened to me. And as I'm sitting there listening to this guy, he started laughing. And he's getting frustrated. He's pouring his heart out to me, and I start laughing, and he says, "What is so funny?" I said, "You." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, you tell me, now let me tell you if I heard this right, 2 years ago, God gave you wonderful, godly, spirit-filled woman of prayer, loved the Lord, served Him, and in less than 2 years you have taken this godly, precious, wonderful, spirit-filled woman, and you have made her into the most miserable, wretched, angry, hostile, frustrated woman that's ever been done, and you've done it in 2 years, congratulations." It takes most men at least 10 to do that. You've done it pretty quick. You will present to yourself what you put in. And when you sit there and you desire to present to yourself something wonderful, it will cost you. But then I'll tell you what you will get. You will long forget whatever the price was when you have it, because it's far above rubies. It's far above anything else when it's yours. God bless you.
This is the end of Side 2. If you'd like more information on tapes, please contact Chapel Tapes. P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. God bless you.